This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Uh-oh.
Tell us a little bit about your character.
I play a character named Lieutenant Grass, and he is a he's been sent by the government from Washington with Second Lieutenant Evan to find Jonah Hex and to get him to serve our needs, the government's needs, which is to put an end to Quentin Turnbull's antics. And he's, I guess he's kind of a we talked about the idea that he kind of represents the future. He's almost like a corporatized version of a military man in those days. He's very orderly and he believes that the future of the world lies in information and intelligence, and not in the rules or the non-rules of the Wild West. So he represents that new sort of the end of an era. Or the beginning of the new era.
Now, Will, I mean, obviously everybody knows you from Washington Arrested Development and from
Obviously, first of all.
Obviously, that's something. Well, you know, and you've done so much comedic stuff for the past few years, and I know that when you first started out, you went out looking for, you know, more dramatic roles and serious stuff like that, and then shifted into comedy based on kind of what came. I mean, are you trying to make a shift back? Are you trying to just say, hey, here's the cool part, you know, it doesn't matter anymore if it's comedy or not, I just want to do what I want to do?
Well, I've said before, if a smarter man would have a plan, I have none. So there's nothing in it that's been, you know, that's been really well thought out. But this was, doing this movie and this part, what represented a really great opportunity for me to do something different that I haven't done in a long time. And, you know, I had a relationship with Jimmy Hayward. Obviously, he comes out of animation and he directed Orton Hears a Who. That's how I got to know Jimmy. And he actually came to me and said, I think that this is, you know, I'm working on this movie, and I think that this would be a great part, and it's something that you could do. And so I really fought for it. I really wanted to be a part of it and do something different. And it's, I got to tell you, it's super exciting for me to be able to do something like this, because I don't get offered parts like this at all. So it's very exciting.
Well, and you've got such a sort of eclectic cast in the film with Malkovich and with Josh Brolin and with you playing the role. It's not your standard comic book cast. Is that something that attracted you as well?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, those guys, Josh and Malkovich, or John Malkovich, or Sir John Malkovich. in my, you know, that's how I think of them. They're such great actors, and of course, they're also you know, not Oscar nominated and Oscar winning actors. It's pretty, you know, that in and of itself is attractive enough. Plus the fact that they're actually legitimately really good. And you have guys like Michael Fassbender, and you got guys like John Gallagher, up and coming young actors from New York. It's just really, yeah, it's really cool to be part of something like this, and it is an interesting cast, I think. I'm not going to put myself in that, but everybody else, and so it's very cool to be a part of a cast like this.
Were you a fan of the comic?
You know, I wasn't really that well versed in the comic, to be honest. Since I've become involved with the movie, I've kind of looked at some of the stuff that, and looked at the comic and looked at the history of it, and it's obviously there's a huge fan base there for it that I didn't even know existed. But I don't know a lot of things. I mean, that could take up three bus rides.
You were describing sort of what your character represents. I mean, do you typically approach roles at all in that way, in that sort of metaphorical, this is what this character represents, think about sort of the themes, or is it sort of more of a practical process of constructing what they look like, what they do? You know?
You mean, do I approach it from when I'm setting out to do something like this?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's really been a when I first read the script, and I talked to Jimmy a few weeks later, because I'm a slow reader. he said, "What do you think?" And I kind of immediately said, "I think this is really cool. This part is really cool." And the way here's how I think of this guy. This he represents the future. He is kind of this awful inevitability. He's kind of a soulless. You know, he's not a bad guy, but he's a little bit soulless in that sort of corporate way. And I think that that really resonated with Jimmy, and that was what he was looking for in terms of approach. And that's how I've been thinking of it. Having said all that, I'm not going De Niro here. So.
Are you able, or do you find that there are moments where you do want to inject some dry humor into the proceedings? Or?
No, not really. Not in the making of the movie. I mean, I remember a couple months ago doing a press conference with. I'm always doing press conferences.
On buses, constantly
on buses or trains. But I was doing a press conference with Mitch Hurwitz, who created Arrested Development. And we were doing, and I answered a question seriously, and then I kind of stopped, and he leaned forward and he said, "It's hard not to end on a joke, isn't it?" I said, "Yeah, it really is. It's when that's your kind of bread and butter, it becomes just part of your thing." And I'm very sensitive to this material and the story, so really there's no part of me that wants to joke it up, as it were.
You're disappointed that you didn't get cool facial hair like John here?
A little bit. But you
is
know,
that
I have some
at the beginning your look.
I have some. Well, my beard grows in so scraggly, so I actually do employ a mustache in this film, but
okay.
Through techniques of makeup and wizardry.
CGI.
That'd be great.
Now, did you have to do any prep work, like learn to ride horses or any of the period stuff, or?
Yeah, John and I had to spend a few days. That was humbling, right, John?
Yeah. That's great. The first time I've been on horseback since fourth grade horse camp in Delaware.
Yeah.
I grew up. So, no, it was really nice. It was great to get out there, and like the team that they have. I mean, almost any kind of action film or not, any film really that you see, a large amount of horses, chances are they've worked on it. That's what they do. They go everywhere, and they were talking that, you know, Will's horse played Flicka in the Flicka movie a few years ago. I think some of the horses have done more films than I have, actually. I think they all have. Even the stand-in horse. But it was really fun to get out there, although I don't know if you noticed this, once we got on the set, once I had the wardrobe on, they had to help me onto the horse.
Well,
there's the boots,
and then there's all the special saddle stuff and the swords and everything. It's luckily for us, there's no scene where we have to run up to our horses and quickly
jump on it
all cool style, because we would not. It would look like, what is happening?
You just lay over the top.
Yeah, just jump over.
Well, I am actually curious if you guys can talk about. This is a summer movie. There's going to be action set pieces. And could you talk a little bit about how you prepare for those action set pieces, and what's the one, because you guys haven't really filmed that much yet, what's the one you're really looking forward to doing?
Well, we're shooting tomorrow night part of this battle that takes place on the river in front of this fort, where John and I come up the river on a cutter, and then they, you know... John Malkovich's character starts lobbing grenades and stuff, or not grenades, but cannonballs and whatever, at us. That's going to be pretty fun, I think, standing on the front of a boat, yelling like a ponce into a big, huge, megaphone type thing. And so that'll be cool to see how that goes down. I mean, a lot of the other kind of fight stuff, it doesn't really take place with us, but that's our big kind of action moment. And of course, our characters are immediately in way over our heads, as you know, we kind of launch this attack, and then they just overwhelm us. But that's gonna be cool. There are a lot of really great set pieces in this. I mean, just the first day when we got to ride into this western town that they built here in City Park was really cool. This cavalry coming into town, John and I in the lead with all these horses behind us and chickens running around, I've never before, and I can imagine I never will again. I think I speak for John, say that we will never enter a movie as coolly as that, like on horseback, looking to kick some ass.
Yeah. Are either of you Civil War buffs or Western buffs?
Not especially, honestly. I mean, when I was like growing up, I definitely. Just as much, I think, as any young boy does at some point, was a huge fan of of westerns and you know, adventure films of that era, and so it's that makes it all the more exciting to be cast in one, let alone one that I actually think is gonna jostle some people, because like I was telling you earlier, is that it does have all the makes of kind of your traditional kind of cowboy movie, but there's a lot of other elements, like the supernatural element, and like even just kind of like the subtle, not overwhelming, but the subtle kind of political undertones that go through the film. I think it's going to make it stand out in its genre,
and really, and also like make it very kind of, even though it's a period piece, of course, it takes place right after the Civil War. It's going to really resonate. I think it's got a kind of a timeless appeal to it because of all these issues.
Early on, when Josh Brolin signed on, he had said that the script was kind of campy and tongue-in-cheek, and on some web forums, whenever you signed on, people were kind of, the fans of Jonah Hex were kind of bemoaning that fact. Is it still going to be campy and tongue-in-cheek? Or?
I don't think so. I think that there's a lot of work that's been done on the script, and like I said before, I don't intend to personally bring any campiness to it.
Okay.
You know, I think that it's important to the fans of Jonah Hex to kind of stay true to that vision, that idea from the original comic, and I think that through the series of rewrites, it's really done that. And you know, Josh is, I know that he is, you know, very adamant about making sure that the script is in a really right and kind of true place. And I think they've done a lot of great work in that respect. So yeah, I don't think that there's going to be any camp. At this point, anyway, there's not.
Well, this is Jimmy's first film, and I'm curious. You guys have only done a little bit. Well, not first film, first live action film. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just curious if you could talk about, you know, his energy and what he's like and what he's looking for and what direct. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a perfect director for this kind of film because he just has boundless energy, and he's such a fan of film, and it really shows just day to day the way that he is on the set. And he's always positive. I mean, this is really just the one day we had with him. But what really struck me was that he just has this momentum and this energy about getting it done and making it exciting and making it look as fantastic as it should.
Yeah, and even when we were rehearsing and before we started shooting, you know, just understanding that I think it's really important for a director to have a very clear vision of how he wants the movie to be, and what, you know, the tone is so important, and I think that Jimmy has that ability to understand the big picture, understand the overall tone of it, and yet at the same time, while maintaining that overall vision, knowing what it takes, knowing what the details are, knowing what, having an answer for every single question, no matter how small. And I think that was, I found that to be very evident when we went and did, a few months ago, did some sort of makeup test, and they were doing camera tests. And as they're running through the various stunts and the various gunshots and how they, you know, how those stunts were going to play out, and they were working with guys in California, Jimmy had a very specific vision for absolutely every gunshot, for how each person was, you know, in a scene where five people get shot. And they had like the stunt guy kind of flipping over backwards, and he's like, well, that's not going to work for this guy, but it might work for this guy. And having that ability to, going into it, really knowing exactly what you want, every single beat, that's so crucial. And I think that Jimmy's really got that. And like John says, he's got boundless energy, and that's going to be important. It's a huge undertaking. There's so many moving parts to any film, but especially something like this that's action intensive. And it's also, you know, he's got to kind of stay true to this, to the comic as well at the same time. So he's done a great job balancing all that stuff out, I think.
And I don't know if they've announced it yet, but is this PG-13 or is this R? I mean, I don't know.
I don't really know either. We don't know, right?
I don't. See, it was a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they fucking know. Well, now it's R.
One more and it's R.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of the level of grittiness, though? Like, I mean, on the Western grit scale, you know, with John Ford this way and Sam Peckinpah this way, is there any way to kind of gauge it from what you've seen so far?
It's, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say. I think it's going to actually kind of have its own, it kind of lives in its own world. In the same way that I think the comic kind of lived in its own world, even though, You know, you have this kind of really troubled hero who's kind of not necessarily 100% purely good. And I don't think that it's going to be hard to kind of hold it up to other Westerns. And like John said, it has this supernatural aspect to it as well. I think it kind of lives in its own world. It'll be interesting to see for us, too.
On that same note, was there a director or anyone who approached you with the project? Did they mention any specific films? I know a lot of people have talked about the Man With No Name trilogy as far as the look of, Roland and stuff.
Well, no, not really. I mean, I think that it's going to have a very kind of down and dirty look to it. Of course, it's going to have I think that it's got a kind of there is a kind of a darkness to a lot of what's happening. The story is very heavy. Here you have a guy who's in Roland, and Roland's character Jonah Hex is a very troubled guy with a very sordid past, very kind of complicated. So I think that, and then the overall aesthetic of it is going to be very kind of, I think it's going to be pretty hard-hitting and kind of dark, but not, you know, not inaccessibly dark.
You question for these performers. Obviously, this is a film where they've built the environments. You guys are on location. Like, you've just been horseback riding training. But you've also done animated work where you're working basically pure imagination. And now there's so many films that use, like, extensive green screen and stuff. Is there something you prefer it when you have everything real, when you're in an environment, or does it matter to you? Do you just bring different tools for each time?
I think you probably bring different tools. Each medium has its own. I mean, John has done a lot of theater, especially recently, and he can attest to it. That's kind of like each one has their own benefits, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this really is, the films that I've worked on have been, pretty moderately budgeted, pretty small independent films. This is really the first legitimate studio picture that I've done, and I feel like I'm going to be a little spoiled by it because Jimmy and this team is very committed to making it all happen right there before your eyes, which I think with this kind of film is really important. So I wouldn't really be able to speak about if there's something that prohibits you about like green screen work or anything like that.
Yeah, it does. There are things about when you're doing an animated film, you're living completely in your own head, especially because you're not working with other actors in the room at all. So now you're also kind of guessing how the other person's going to interpret the other line, and then you work on stuff kind of green screen stuff, and you have to employ a little bit of that same thing, use your imagination. I did this kids movie for Disney that's coming out this summer, and we had to kind of Zach Galifianakis and I had to like react to
G-Force.
We had to kind of react to nothing, which is a very strange thing, and you got to kind of get your mind around that. And coming on something like this where everything's very practical, I think John's right. There is a kind of it is kind of luxurious be able to live in the real world, even though the story is kind of out there, to be able to actually physically deal with stuff. It feels like a luxury at this point.
It just seems like the green screen almost like theater at this point, like black box experimental, like you're bringing everything.
Yeah, absolutely you are. And the hard part about it is you have no idea. It's very difficult to gauge where you are. It's like my wife always says, it's almost like you've just come out of a party and you don't know how loud your voice is. You're like, wait, am I speaking too loud? Is this too much? Because there's very little context there.
I am curious. You guys have been in New Orleans for at least a few days. Can you talk a little bit about the advantages of shooting in New Orleans? What do you get to do at night when you're not shooting?
Eat a lot.
Yeah. Food's great.
That's amazing.
There's, of course, there's a tremendous amount of nightlife here in New Orleans. We've been able to see some great music and stuff. We kind of missed Jazz Fest, probably for the best, because it's a little insane. I mean, New Orleans is a fun town. Very few other places where you wake up and you walk outside and people are walking around with a 64-ounce cocktail with a strap on it.
or the big-ass beer, as they call it.
Yeah, the big-ass beer. I mean, it's a world unto itself, for sure.
Have you guys, before being actors or in, you know, in your life, have you guys partied here in New Orleans before?
I'd never even been when we came here a few weeks ago to first get started on it. So it's been a joy to be working on the film, but it's also just been a joy to be able to explore the city. It's
very I was never here. I don't really take part in the drinking anymore, but I'm lucky that I never came here back then, because I may have died here.
I wanted to ask you guys for a second just about, in terms of, I mean, you guys are a matching set on screen to a certain extent, you know, and being his superior officer and how Grass Evan, so how did Grass Evan play off each other a little bit? If he's looking up to Hex, you're out to find Hex and you're straight-laced. I mean, what has the rapport been like building those two characters together?
Well, it's been good. We've spent a lot of time together, you know, on and off set while we've been here, and he, I'll let John kind of go on this, but I will say that my character, there's a little bit of envy there, because he does revere Hex so much. Clearly there's a part of him that really admires him, and it's difficult, because I feel like my character really recognizes that, and it's there's like a mixture of jealousy and that kind of comes out with me feeling like he's being insubordinate.
There is really a unique little triangle between our two characters and Jonah Hex that is actually kind of striking, and I think something you don't necessarily expect when you're reading the script to kind of an action blockbuster film. There's this really deep-rooted psychological thing that's happening where I am, you know, I am having this hero worshipping, you know, of Jonah Hex, and I kind of wish that, you know, Jonah Hex was my superior officer, and that I could ride around on a horse all day and take orders from him. And like you said, like, you know, there's Grass is caught in the middle with his own agenda and his own kind of, you know, loathing of Jonah Hex and his, you know, group of, you know, the way that he kind of gets things done.
There's some great scenes with Evan when he first, at one point goes to bring Hex back to the Union camp, and you really see that his admiration for Hex, or his desire to kind of know a little bit more about him and learn from him. And then at the end of the movie, he also tries to kind of rides with him for a little bit and says, you know, basically he'd like to go with him in a way. It's kind of a it's really kind of a lovely little piece.
Is it another example of bromance?
I suppose. It feels like it's pre-bromance days, though.
This is back before bromance was cool.
Yeah, that's right.
Bromance before bromance.
But bromance has been seeping into many, many films recently, or am I wrong about this?
No, I think you're dead on.
Well, Rio Bravo's a bromance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big part of Western culture. Yeah. Depending on somebody else and what that means, and how far can you trust them, and how far do you...
I think that, you know, it's based on the fact that you had all these characters and who spent a lot of time, you know, it would take infinitely longer to travel anywhere by horseback or whatever, and so you had men spending a lot of time with each other, counting on each other, relying on each other, and those relationships are documented through all sorts of movies that cover the genre.
Because Hex isn't one of the best-known comic book characters, do you guys have any sense of as to whether or not you're sort of granted more freedom and autonomy here than would have been bestowed upon, say, the Spider-Man or Batman filmmakers?
Probably. I mean, I think that there is a fan base, a core fan base that's you know, very, very hardcore about it, right? and I'm sure they're sitting two people away from me. But I guess there's probably the danger of not worrying about them, because it is a small, it seems to be like not as well known a character. However, I think that it does seem like the filmmakers are very intent on trying to stay true to the character, and not because they don't want to alienate the fanboys, no offense, but because they want to really adhere to the story, But yeah, there probably is more leeway. If you look back, I mean, Jonah Hex kind of was in a bunch of different incarnations, right? There was like the original, he was part of a different series of comics, then he had his own comics as a spin-off, and then another series after that with different writers and different illustrators. So I think that he has kind of evolved as well. He's also made appearances in like the Batman cartoon as well at a certain point. So even the actual comic itself kind of took liberties on the character. So you hope that if there are people out there who feel like there were liberties taken, that they can understand that it's artistic license, and not a desire to say screw it to the character.
Yeah.
Since you're sort of a little unfamiliar with the script, can you talk about like how it starts and the storyline and like how much of an origin story it is?
John?
Begins on a cold, dusty night.
That's true.
So much of the script was a big surprise because you started and you think you're going, oh, okay, I know what this is going to be. It's this kind of wild western kind of like, you know, Sam Peckinpah kind of thing. But you know, every page it takes some kind of unique turn. And so, you know, this it doesn't follow, I think, kind of like your typical kind of, you know, start to finish type of arc of this type of movie, like based on a comic book, you know, action adventure. I can't really think, as far as what it begins, what it ends, you know, you should.
It starts with this guy who's kind of this renegade outlaw living, in this kind of lawless West, and he. You decipher very early on that he's a badass, and that there's some kind of sort of pathos there. There's something happening, and then you have, it's kind of like you have, you know, you as the story moves, you understand that he has this complicated relationship with the character Quentin Turnbull, played by John Malkovich, who is ultimately the villain in the story. But everybody's kind of a good guy and everybody's kind of a villain. Everybody makes a case for why they're doing what they're doing. And I think maybe the only person who's really not that sympathetic is probably Turnbull. He is kind of like pure evil. I think that he represents a guy who has nothing to lose because he's lost it all. So, you know, which is a very difficult thing to combat against. And I think that Jonah understands that, you know, it's like, I think that there are probably, you could draw parallels to terrorism and terrorists people who are willing to do anything are very dangerous adversaries. So you have, so Jonah's kind of fighting that, and he's kind of fighting the system, which we represent, and he's fighting his past, and here you have a guy who reluctantly decides to confront his demons, something that he has clearly been running away from for a long time, and it culminates with this crazy huge battle. I don't want to give too much away.
Well, I guess this is kind of the staple thing, but you guys are doing a movie based on comic books, and it might not be this summer, but it would definitely be next summer that you guys would go to Comic-Con to promote this thing. So have you guys ever been, and are you prepared to be in front of, you know, the 7,000 fans talking about this?
I'm prepared to go. I don't know how prepared I'd be to really take the stage and discuss. I'm sure the last person they'd want to hear from would be me there, but I've always wanted to go, honestly. I would jump at the chance.
I went to the one that they had in San Francisco.
WonderCon.
This past year, went up there for Sit Down, Shut Up, which is this animated show that I've been doing with Mitch Hurwitz, and it's an interesting environment, to say the least. When you're walking along, and you see like a stormtrooper, Darth Vader, a couple aliens, you know, just walking by, and you're like, yeah, all right, not, you know, nobody seems all that fazed by it.
Did you see the guy dressed as Wonder Woman?
I did not.
You missed out.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I have a picture on my phone.
I saw a few real freaks. We had a couple serious freaks who came into an autograph session, and at one point I thought, well, I don't know if I should be fearing for my life, but where the hell is security? This guy is inches away from us, and he might snap. It looks like he's already snapped, but he might snap again. The final snap.
Well, I just wanted to ask the obligatory Arrested Development question. As far as the movie goes, what's the latest you've heard, and what's your interest at this point?
My interest is still very strong. It's something that we're actively, you know, I've said this before, but we are actively working on it. Like I said, in a few interviews, there are a lot of moving parts to it. We have nine main cast members, and then you have to... The schedule, yeah, it's pretty nuts. So, but it is something that everybody is, we are in negotiations on, actually, at this point, trying to figure it out, figure out the time, figure out when we're going to start. The script is slowly coming along. I'm working with Mitch Hurwitz on something else right now, so kind of getting updates a little bit as we go on that, and it's hopefully have a script within the next couple months. So, you know, the goal has been to potentially start shooting by before the end of the year.
So you would say it's definitely going to happen.
I would be very surprised at this point if it didn't. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
Everybody's now very committed to trying to make the deals happen and make it work.
Is it weird for you to constantly be getting the Arrested Development question, or do you sort of enjoy it because there's so many fans out there of the show?
Well, it's kind of become the norm now. Like, it's not weird anymore. And it is nice to know that there are a lot of fans out there still who want something like this. I'm sorry?
If only they'd all been Nielsen fans.
I know.
It's got to be kind of gratifying after, you know, years of struggle that no one was watching the show, and now everybody's begging for a movie.
It is. To a certain extent, it is nice to know that people really have appreciated the show, that it kind of has this afterlife. Because when we were making the show, it was such a struggle. You know, week to week, we never knew if we were going to make it, if we were going to still, you know, keep shooting for the next week. And that's very frustrating. But yeah, it is nice to know that the people out there still give a shit.
You ever look at Job evolve in the movie in any way, or learn any lessons, or will he just be Job like we've always known him?
I can't answer that. I don't know. I think that you know, it always seems like with all the characters on that show that anytime they feel like they've achieved some growth or they've learned a lesson, they very quickly end up back at square one. You know, these are extraordinarily dysfunctional people.
You ever go on Hulu and look at all the comments for people like just loving the show?
No. Are they good?
They're good.
Any bad ones? All I care about are the bad ones.
I gotta be honest, they've called your performance out a number of times.
No way.
They have. But besides you, they're very complimentary.
Wait a second.
In a good way, you're saying.
Wait a second.
Wait, did I say, well, I wasn't supposed to talk about that, I'm sorry.
No, but who, like, what screen names? Like
Max Smith 12.
Yeah.
I forget the last few words. There's a few people on there who are very vocal.
Very vocal about their disdain for me?
Specifically you.
Okay.
And the magic tricks, and they're very angry.
Well, I got some work cut out for me. What constitutes murder? did you guys check out Tina Fey's acceptance speech of the Golden Globes, where she called out a couple?
Yes, that was great.
That was awesome,
yeah,
wasn't
so
it?
Funny.
You know, with regards to comments on the internet, it's so funny because there are it kind of cuts both ways. You can kind of look at stuff and people say like, "Hey, that was really great." And you think, "Wow, that feels really good," and then you read some, you know, dick writing like, "This person is he's the worst ever." And, you know, you realize that a lot of these people are like 12-year-olds in their parents' basement. And, like, who gives a shit?
There's a great thing on Funny or Die right now with Casey Wilson. This is from SNL.
Yeah.
And it's her reading her IMDb page. And at first laughing it off, and then gradually getting so upset she has to go for a long walk through L.A. and think about what's been said. And...
You know, when we were... when we were on the set of Let's Go to Prison, Y'all remember that, right? We, there was, this is a true story. There was somebody had written something on IMDb about Dax and I being, sort of being dicks on set, and we had demanded that we had this running bit while we were shooting. We were shooting at the Joliet prison, and they had it. Which is a lovely place.
Yeah, I'm from Joliet originally.
Oh, so you know, yeah, you know. Oh, God, what a gorgeous town. And so we were... They had this, like, really craptastic golf cart that was on... That was a production golf cart. They had the one. And our joke was, it was so... There was such a little, small budget. We had a $4 million movie. And our joke was, like, that golf cart better be ready to take us back to our trailer. We had, like, these crappy... two banger trailers that were so old that people had been shot in, I think, and like, so that was our joke. So somebody had written on the internet like, these guys are demanding that their golf cart's ready, and stuff, which was just way out of context, not true in any way. So and then there was like a, I guess there was like a dialogue back and forth. This person had posted that, and then somebody had said like, how the hell do you know this? And they said, well, I know somebody's working on the movie. And they said, well, how do we know if we can believe you? And then the person said, My brother is the locations intern. So within 20 minutes, we kind of called somebody and figured out that there was only one locations intern. It was this kid who lived in the area. The person who had been posting was his 12-year-old sister. And of course, thankfully, she was grounded from the internet for 2 weeks. Not a joke, totally true. But that incident put the internet in perspective for me, and all those kind of comments. It's like, God, who cares? You know, for the most part.
So I want to ask, we've been on a very long bus ride while talking to the two of you, and we've heard before we got here about these bugs, that there could be crocodiles. That we heard the email invite we got was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. So how did they prepare you? Did they say to you, there's a lot of bugs, poison ivy? What did they say to you guys?
They don't care about us.
This is the first I'm hearing of it.
Yeah, I haven't heard a word.
You guys get paid. We don't.
I'm not getting off the bus.
Way to go, Steve.
Yes, all
right. I'm actually allergic to alligators.
I know that you're the first person they would call about this, but have you heard anything about Grindhouse being restored since you did the stuff for Don't?
First of all, you're absolutely right. I am the first person they'd call. No, I didn't know anything about that.
Well, I mean, they just, since the movies thus far on either DVD or Blu-ray have been separate, and those trailers are like nowhere to be found.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, yeah.
So. You know, I'm embarrassed to say I never saw it. I never saw the final thing. I would like to. So, if they bring it back, I'd like to know.
If it's on cable, they show it as Grindhouse, but not on DVD. Yeah, yeah.
You'd think that Edgar Wright would have sent it to me, right?
Yeah.
Like, you think that he would have done me a solid.
We'll pass it along.
Help a bro out. Are you guys going up there at all to
they're trying to work it out.
Yeah. Look, give him a message for me. Thanks. And to Mike Serra, what's up?
So, John, how's the big screen adaptation of your cult hit TV show coming along?
Oh, it's going really well. I have a meeting tonight, actually. It's like 2 a.m. I don't know why they wanted to meet and why they want to meet in the bathroom in the lobby of my hotel. But I have some really great meetings lined up to discuss it. So.
But that's the TV show about your cult, just to be clear.
Yes.
Yes,
I formed a cult.
Yeah.
Well, since you both play Union soldiers, is there any conflict with Jonah Hex having fought for the Confederacy?
Not really. Nothing that's really kind of apparent in the script.
Yeah, you know, it's... You kind of get the sense that he has his principles, obviously, Jonah Hex, but while also kind of having this kind of lack of morality, you get the sense that, you know, there's no real true side that he's on. You kind of get the sense that because he just kind of ended up fighting for the Confederacy, you get the sense that he could have ended up fighting, you know, on any front, really.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like he's got any kind of allegiance to the Confederacy based on kind of political views or anything.
Well, in the book originally, he actually surrendered to the Union troops.
Well, they do refer to that.
Okay.
And this, that he becomes disillusioned with the Confederacy for various reasons. I think that had more to do with what Turnbull was doing than the actual the politics of the Confederacy. So I'm not entirely sure. But there is reference to that, because that's how they find... That's kind of the kernel of the problem between Hex and Turnbull, is that when Hex turns himself in, he refuses to divulge the whereabouts of the rest of his platoon or whatever, but then they're able to gather by the color of the mud on his boots, the red mud or clay. It only exists in one valley, and so the Union kind of deciphers from that's where they must be. So Turnbull holds Hex responsible for the death of his son, Jeb Turnbull, who was also Hex's best friend. So it's very complicated.
It's the middle of May right now. How long are you guys here in town shooting for? How long is the production for, too?
End of June or mid-July. We're kind of in and out from now until then.
So really, they pick the most temperate time of year for you to be outside.
Yeah. Well, look, if you're going to be outside New Orleans, you might as well be wearing two layers of wool. Boots, hat, and you might as well be on a horse, yeah.
That's funny.
It's going to get soupy. Things get pretty mealy in your costume, that's for sure.
Yeah, if you are shooting only, like, not all the time, are you planning on, like, leaving town and coming back, or how does that work?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure how long this stretch is for me. I don't know when I'm going back.
The only thing I've noticed is we've been on a very dark road for at least 10-15 minutes.
We're not taking you to kill you.
I'm just saying.
You wanted to know about murder earlier.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. No, I just want to know statutes. Like, what? Look, let's relax. Everybody be cool. Are we close?
What's been the most difficult part of the shoot for you guys? Physically or otherwise.
Probably getting to know the horses and the humility involved in that. We were, John and I went up for a few days. We're riding horses, and we started slowly, and then one day we got there, and the Josh's stunt guys and a couple other stunt guys were there, and they were riding around in this big open field, pretty expertly. Like full gallops and kind of laughing and circling around and stuff. And we found out that they'd just been riding for a couple hours. And we'd been riding for a couple days. We were gingerly at a trot, you know. They're going to look like they're on Harleys and we're going to look like we're on Vespas.
The magic of movies, though. I think they'll make it work.
Yeah.
Is there any special weapons training? Using period guns?
No.
No cross.
We don't draw any weapons.
We don't really
draw
in the film.
We rely on the power of our gaze and our looks.
Yes. Harsh language.
Some harsh language. Yeah. Some very fairly like medium loud staccato. Is also good.
And that was G-A-Z-E.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gaze.
Rely on our gaze.
You want me to talk about some other people's movies?
what films are you looking forward to this summer? Either of you.
John's seen Star Trek. I haven't seen it. You liked it.
I did. I really enjoyed it. I liked it. What do I want to see?
I'm looking forward to all the Warner Brothers movies.
Yeah.
This summer.
Especially.
Like...
Terminator.
Can't wait.
Harry Potter.
Wait.
Very excited for that.
His girlfriend's past.
Can't wait.
Hangover. Yeah,
that just came out. Hangover, by the way, is supposed to be great.
It is.
I do want
to
see that.
All three of those guys are buddies of mine.
I want to see the one he's in. This is a Tarantino movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that.
Glorious Bastards.
Yeah,
yeah, that's going to be great.
And I just saw the first photos of Michael from the film.
Oh, really?
Great. Yeah.
He's an awesome actor.
Really?
Fassbender.
He's great.
Oh, he's amazing.
Are they going to let him off so he can go to France for the premiere?
I think he's done. I think he's wrapped. I'm not sure. I usually get his schedule sent to me. Just okay it, because I don't want him to get overtired. So I keep I'm very up to date on everybody in the film. Schedule, their call times, making sure that John gets his turnaround. I'm like kind of the den mother on
part,
set. I feel like I could AD a movie.
So would you be willing to do another comic book movie after this one? I mean, there's talk about Green Lantern coming out.
Yeah.
And if they keep scraping the bottom of the barrel, maybe Plastic Man. So.
Wow. Yeah.
You'd be a good Plastic Man.
Thank you.
That's what he was trying to say.
He's trying to say that I'd be good at the bottom of a barrel.
Well, you could pull it off.
Sure. Is there a comic book character known as Bottom Feeder?
Probably.
But that's probably an X-rated. He just feeds off bottoms.
I think we just came up with a new porn comic book.
Great. Let's do it.
Are you guys, last question, are you guys signed for multiple Jonah Hex movies?
No.
No.
All right, then.
We're not.
That's actually unusual in comic book deals. They wouldn't.
Right. If this were Marvel, we'd have like 9 pictures.
Yeah. Unless you're Terrence Howard.
Yeah.
Too soon?
I don't.
Thank you.
Yeah.